It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, changes to the GED high school equivalency exam led to a big drop in the number of people taking it and passing it. We'll find out about an innovative program in southeastern Wisconsin that's working to address that issue.
First, President Trump delivered a wide-ranging 77-minute speech in Arizona last night. In the campaign-style speech, he rehashed his own statements on Charlottesville, renewed his hardline immigration stance, and attacked the media.
And back in the Capitol, the rift between the president and key members of the Republican Party continues to deepen. Reports say that the president and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell haven't spoken since an angry phone call earlier this month. You can share your thoughts on the president's Arizona speech, the Republican Party, and more at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Ginger Gibson is a correspondent at Reuters, and she joins us to look at those stories and more in our weekly look at national politics. Ginger, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Well, President Trump gave a 77-minute, it was kind of a campaign-style speech in Arizona last night, and the governor of Arizona had asked him not to come. He came anyway. Tell us about the scene there and what struck you most about the speech.
You're right. Trump's speech raised a lot of eyebrows last night. It was pretty wide-ranging in topics, spent a good amount of time going after the press. But I think what was sort of maybe not surprising, but one of the most standout moments was while he didn't criticize the two senators from Arizona by name, joking that he promised his staff he would not do so, he did go after two Republican senators in their own state, including Jeff Flake, who's up for re-election in the next election cycle, and then tweeted the next morning criticism of Jeff Flake. So pretty unusual to see a president criticizing a member of his own party, just that, but also on his own turf in his own state.
And also interesting, he did not mention or send well wishes to Senator John McCain.
He did not mention him by name. You know, we know Senator John McCain is just, I believe, wrapping up a round of chemotherapy and radiation for cancer in his brain that was detected earlier this summer. It would not be unusual for someone, even of another party, to say, "Hope you're feeling better," and that didn't happen. Didn't say get well soon. Just sort of namelessly criticized him repeatedly for not voting for his Affordable Care Act repeal bill.
And apparently 15 minutes, I didn't run the timer, but I've read that 15 minutes were spent defending his comments on Charlottesville and that the president rehashed three of his statements and argued that he was unfairly criticized by the press for making controversial comments on race.
That's correct. He went on at length reading some of his previous statements, arguing that the media had unfairly portrayed what he had said. You know, the criticism of Trump on this front is that he's using dog whistles, that he's saying things in a way that one could look at it and say, well, he just criticized racist, but he then turns around and says it's a matter of both sides, which folks like David Duke or other white supremacist groups have praised as sort of Trump's way of winking and nodding. And that's what we've heard the criticism in the press. And Trump keeps trying to insist, like, that's not what's happening here. And they're just out to get me. Whereas, as we know, the release, if that's not the desired effect, it is the consequence of some of his remarks.
I hit him with neo-Nazi. I hit him with everything. I got the white supremacists, the neo-Nazi. I got them all in there, let's say. Yeah, KKK, we have KKK. I got them all. So they're having a hard time. So what did they say, right? It should have been sooner. He's a racist. It should have been sooner. Okay.
Ginger Gibson is with us right now from Reuters, and we're recapping the week's top stories in national politics, including the president's campaign-style speech in Arizona last night, and the president, again, getting into his comments on Charlottesville. And in response to all those events and the events on the ground in Charlottesville, there were protesters there last night, Ginger.
That's correct. We saw protesters outside. They clashed with the police. I mean, he is going into an area to hold this event that is a bit volatile. There are people who strongly disagree with him. It is not a decidedly red state or a decidedly red area where there's not going to be groups of political opposition. Arizona is a state that could very easily be won by a Democrat in the next Senate race or in the next presidential election. And so not surprised to see opponents. We also have to remember that his remarks about immigrants have been strongly criticized as being unfair, particularly towards Mexican-American immigrants. It is a state with a sizable Mexican-American population. So it's not just that population, but all the people who are their friends or their families or their neighbors who feel Trump is unfairly characterizing them and their role in the United States culture.
And in terms of another one of his campaign platforms, the border wall, that came up again last night.
It did. He has really rattled Wall Street today with his remarks last night about the border wall. He is insisting that the United States Congress give him money to begin building that wall. We can remember his campaign promise that Mexico was going to pay for the wall. That always seemed like a very unlikely proposition, since getting another sovereign nation to pay for border wall is going to be near impossible. Maybe there's a way, but not likely. And that's starting to catch up with Trump, who's now asking Congress to do what he calls a down payment to get the construction started. He made that call again last night, saying that he would shut the government down if they didn't give him funding for a wall. They only have 12 more working days in Congress when they return in the beginning of September to fund the government in order to prevent a government shutdown. And he really sort of rattled folks at the idea that he might force a government shutdown to try to get his border wall money.
And finally, Ginger, he made some allusions to, didn't say anything definitive, but made some allusions to his stance on a controversial figure in Arizona, Sheriff Arpaio.
That's correct. Sheriff Arpaio, who was a supporter of Trump, a very controversial figure who kept tent prisons in the very hot Arizona desert. He was convicted of racial discrimination in his policing. He's expected to be sentenced shortly, and Trump seemed to heavily suggest that he could give him a pardon and let him avoid that prison time. I have no doubt that if he were to do so, that would really upset particularly the people who have been the most critical of him in this last week for his response to Charlottesville, getting into something where someone has been, you know, convicted by a judge, in this case not a jury, but for engaging in some types of racial discrimination, would truly reinforce that criticism Trump has seen. And so that surprised a lot of people that he was so publicly stating that he's considering doing that.
And just before we move on, Ginger, I mean, President Trump presumably running again in 2020, but he just won an election less than a year ago. He's doing these campaign-style speeches in various places around the country. What do you see as the goal? Is it to keep the base energized? Is it to get support for his platform? What do you think, and is it working?
Yeah, Trump made an unusual move. And the day he took office, he filed for re-election. Normally, presidents in their first term wait until 2 years into their first term after the midterm elections to file for re-election. So Trump was actually holding a re-election rally. It wasn't even a campaign-like rally. It was, in fact, one of his re-election rallies. We don't normally see this from presidents and presidential candidates. They tend to wait. But that's the place where he feels maybe the most comfortable. It is a format where he feels like he can say wherever he wants. And we know that there are rules, there are constraints on what can be said at a government-organized or a government rally. President Obama often held sort of government-organized events where he was pushing for legislation. That's allowed. But engaging in politicking, saying who you should and shouldn't vote for, that is not allowed at a government-organized event. And I think Trump probably, or at least those around Trump, know it would be very difficult to constrain what he can and cannot say at such an event, and that he risks sort of crossing that line should they be government events.
Ginger Gibson is with us right now from Reuters as we take a look back at the week's top stories in national politics.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Tell us what you thought of the president's speech in Arizona last night. What did you think of the president's defense of his statements on the violence in Charlottesville? And tell us what you think of the president's relationship with other Republicans like Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. Do you think they can work together and get things done? If you're a Republican, are you worried about party unity? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're taking our weekly look at the latest in national politics with Ginger Gibson. She's a correspondent at Reuters.
You can join in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Are you seeing a divide between the president and other key Republicans like Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell? Is that something you're worried about? Do you think it'll make it hard to get stuff done with tax reform, debt ceiling, immigration, the border wall funding? Should the president keep pushing his immigration agenda? And do you think the Trump administration should be able to withhold funding from sanctuary cities? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Ginger, in his speech last night, the president also seemed to want to look at Congress, where Congress has stood with action. He's been critical of Congress, and here's what he said.
So I have a message for Congress tonight. Your job is to represent American families, American people, American workers. It's your job. You need to represent them on the border, on taxes, on health care, one vote, and on every other issue that affects their lives.
Emphasis on health care there, and it sounds as though, reading the tone and the comments, that the mood is souring between the president and Republicans in Congress.
It has been souring, I think, from day one. It is a struggle that President Trump is having in a very public manner, which is that even the president can't command a Congress controlled by his own party to do what they want when he wants it. It is much more complicated and difficult than that. We saw this feud sort of unfolding between President Trump and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. There have been critical words on both sides. And we saw again today some acknowledgement from McConnell that he will still work with the president, that he will meet with him likely when they return in September. So maybe a little bit of a thawing, but it's a tough one. And you know, I've covered governors that have no government background that get into office and they suddenly discover it's not like running a business where you can just tell everybody what to do and that they will immediately do it. That it is in legislative politics is a much more complicated endeavor. And I think we're watching in real time as Donald Trump learns those sometimes very difficult lessons.
And Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and President Trump, they have very different political styles. It seems as though McConnell is very disciplined, discreet, plays his cards close to his vest, and it seems President Trump he's a straight shooter.
Yeah, you don't get to be a Senate Majority Leader without having a deep understanding of how politics work, how people work, how to broker deals, how to bring people together. He had to get most of his caucus to say that he was the best guy in the room, and that alone can be very difficult, especially you'd understand if you ever talk to a member of the United States Senate. Everyone thinks that they are the smartest, best guy or woman in the room. So it is a different type of skill. It's a different type of politicking. Donald Trump has risen to power largely by understanding marketing and branding and getting people to see him as a change agent, as someone who can do something different. A lot of what people are left scratching their heads, even after we watched him last night, why is he talking about a wall? Why is he talking about shutdown? Doesn't he understand he has to deal with these members of Congress? But that's not Donald Trump's skill. Donald Trump's skill is getting all those people excited whenever he says, yes, I'm going to build this wall. And so they do have very different styles, very different backgrounds, very different approaches to governing that I think we're seeing really sort of bear out in how they've struggled to get along with one another.
Let's take a caller now. We've got Ben on the line in Madison. Ben, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. So on a daily basis, NPR has sober, rational discussions about President Trump's agenda. And I appreciate your attempt to maintain a rational viewpoint on the president. I know NPR prides itself on that, and I think listeners appreciate it, that we're getting relatively unbiased conversation. The problem is you're talking about a sociopath. You're talking about someone who is unqualified to be president, and every single person who voted for him before the election knew that. 5-minute review of his public record, of his statements, the sexual harassment, the business, it goes on and on. So now you have this person who is leading the country, and you have all these people very confused about what's going on. We understand exactly what's going on. The president, as I said, is a sociopath and is completely incompetent for his job.
Ben, thanks for the call. And Ginger, Ben saying that, you know, there's no point having these kinds of conversations about the president. He thinks there's a larger conversation, elephant in the room, that the president is not suited, is not fit. Is that something that's picking up traction as you see it?
I think it's not picking up as much traction as much as he might like it to be. Those types of conversations are going to be very difficult. We have to remember Congress is controlled by Republicans. They still see maybe the possibility to get some of the things they want done, like tax reform, like cutting tax rates at a minimum, like repealing the Affordable Care Act. Those are still goals that he had. And I would make a pretty bold statement here, but Trump might have become the most predictable politician in Washington. These cycles that we've seen from him continue. Anyone who's been following closely for the last 2 years would not have been surprised by his speech last night in Arizona, or the fact that he got up today at the American Legion conference and gave a very sober, calm speech in front of that group. That's how he works. It should stop surprising people that he does surprising things sometimes.
Ben, thank you for the call. And next, we're gonna go to Jim in Rice Lake. Jim, hi.
Hi. I'm not going to try to diagnose the president like the previous caller, but I would agree in the sense that he is an intellectually undisciplined president because of his lack of government experience and because he, you know, cannot stop talking about Charlottesville when any other rational player would have moved on from the subject. And I think what we should realize, reflects the previous caller's comments, it underscores how incredibly weak a candidate Hillary Clinton was. And the moral of the story is the Democratic Party should nominate people who are under federal investigation as their presidential nominee. And I say so as a registered Democrat. I'll take the answer off the air.
Okay, Jim, thanks for that. And Ginger, your thoughts?
You know, I think that you make an excellent point. We've already started to see a real serious discussion among Democrats, a real sort of soul-searching about how you oppose Donald Trump, what it is about him that voters liked or didn't like about Hillary Clinton, how much of each of those things was a factor. I think that this election cycle might be one of the longest we've had in a long time. We've already got Donald Trump declaring for re-election in January. We had our first Democratic challenger, a member of Congress, declare earlier this month. And I think we're going to continue to hear this conversation. And I think it is a real important discussion, not just for each party to have, but we as a country to ask ourselves, what do we want in our leaders and what is our priority? I think we're going to see that conversation going on for the next 3 years about what are our priorities and what's most important and what do we value in an elected official. And I think that there's going to be a lot of people who defend Hillary Clinton and say she was a great leader. She was informed. She was talking about. She had a great platform. She could talk about the issues. And others who are going to criticize her and say she wasn't a great candidate. And both of those folks are going to have a lot of factual points to make on their side of the debate.
And Ginger, moving on now, one of the biggest stories of the last week was former chief strategist Steve Bannon's departure from the White House after events in Charlottesville. And it seems as though he didn't miss a beat. He's right back in the saddle at Breitbart. What does it look like that relationship is going to be like now between the president and his former chief strategist?
That relationship already looks very strained. Bannon left the White House, went immediately back to Breitbart. There was a lot of speculating about what kind of role was he going to play. Was he going to be a megaphone for the president? Was he going to be providing sort of a cheerleading squad? And immediately within the first week, we see Breitbart criticizing President Trump's speech Monday night on Afghanistan in very harsh terms, suggesting that he had been bought into policies and positions that were not those that he campaigned on or that people voted him for. So not going to be a cheerleading squad coming out of Breitbart for the White House. Could be very critical. And it's going to be a relationship that I think is going to have to age over time. One of the important things to remember, though, that undecided voter who really tipped the election last November, probably not reading Breitbart. It's Trump's base that's reading Breitbart, and that's who he's talking to at these rallies, and that's who Bannon's been talking to for this time. And so it'll be interesting to see how that sort of push and pull plays out in the next few months.
And on to another story. Los Angeles is looking at joining the Sanctuary City lawsuit that, for instance, San Francisco and Chicago are a part of. Where does that stand now?
It's right. So we know that sanctuary cities are sort of cities across the U.S. That say that they won't participate in the federal immigration policies and that they would sort of be a place where you could be an illegal immigrant. And as long as you aren't doing anything really egregious, that they're not going to turn you over to the federal government. It's become a real point of contention. And there we've seen some of the move by the administration to sort of try to take money away from these sanctuary cities or try to force them to go along with some of the federal policies and the federal enforcement. And so we have a number of cities. This was a lawsuit with a group of California cities where they've said that that the administration can't force these jurisdictions by cutting off their funding or by creating funding conditions. This type of enforcement has a long history. It's how the federal government basically got all of the states to raise the drinking age to 21. We know that a number of states didn't want to do that. So it's worked before, and it's not worked before. In other cases, the courts have said you can't do that. So Los Angeles is a pretty big city to jump onto this, and it's also not an overwhelmingly blue city. It is a city that has to balance a lot of issues, a lot of different stakeholders, a lot of different people, unlike San Francisco, which was sort of leading this lawsuit to begin with. So it's another piece of evidence that cities and states probably in the future are willing to sort of fight the Obama administration on these types of moves. I mean, the Trump administration. Oh, goodness.
Ginger, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me.
That was Ginger Gibson, correspondent at Reuters, and she was with us there for our look at the week in Washington.